For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, everybody, welcome to episode number one of the 2023 podcast season for the Tiger Minor League Report. I'm Rogelio Castillo. Alongside me is Chris Brown and our special guest, the voice of the Erie Seawolves, Rick Gagne, who thank you for taking the time on this Sunday evening. I was expecting some, I don't know why I expected some culinary cuisine or something along those lines, because every time you'll send me pictures every once in a while, I'm like, man, he is eating good. Somewhere, Greg is always eating good.
Yeah, we did this tonight. I don't know if I can pull it up on my phone here, but we did. You can see it on my Instagram too, Raj. Did some pork chops.
Ooh, wow. Nice.
With an herb crust and the cast iron skillet. So we have a new partner last year, Gordon's Butcher and Meat Shop, and sent my lovely wife Megan there while we were in Akron, and she found two really good bone-in pork chops, and so we did those tonight.
Outstanding.
Cast iron skillet action. No grill tonight, but cast iron skillet.
Yeah, it's still a little cold for grilling, especially.
Oh, cold doesn't stop me from grilling.
That's true.
Today was just laziness.
Yeah, that was one of the things that we learned from our trips out there last year was how good of a cook you are and your history of cooking. I guess through your heritage.
Yeah, that's a great heritage. Learned from a very young age how to cook, and then lived by myself. I actually would cook for my roommates in college, and then living on your own until I met my wife. You got to be self-sufficient in the kitchen, and so I'm a total food snob, and I free willingly admit that. But yeah, I love entertaining and cooking for people, so that's kind of like my little passion. So for me, it's a de-stressor, especially we have an off day. I'll sit in the kitchen for 4 hours and just make random things, and I always get the call from the other room, are you sure you don't need help, honey? And I'm like, no, I want my time. Let me sit here. I put on my Greek music. I sit there and I just cook away. And yeah.
Did you go to Greece this offseason?
We did. We were just there. So we had, we did two European trips in the fall. We did Italy, Switzerland, Germany, Poland. And then we just were in Thessaloniki, Greece about 4 weeks ago. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Traveling man.
Yeah. I wanted to say this summer, but I forget it's the winter. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't get to go on those trips during the season, and it never fails. Like, my wife went to Ecuador last summer, and that would be a really cool one to go to, and couldn't go because of baseball.
Didn't she go to Australia too?
She was just there. Yeah, Australia and New Zealand, and so yeah, it's been quite the recuperation time for her the last week.
I was gonna say that's quite a jet lag. Must be insane, but
it's
still Akron.
So desperate.
New Zealand, Akron.
Akron's the rubber capital of the world, and also the home of the.
And there's no kangaroos.
Yes. And there's also the Black Keys came from Akron, too. So if you're familiar.
That's true. And LeBron James.
And LeBron James, yeah. And wasn't there the home of the Zips? Are they the Zips?
Yes, they are. The Akron Zips. Yeah.
Zips, okay. Yeah, they're the strange name.
I guess Akron isn't far from where you grew up, too, right? I didn't even think about that.
About 40 minutes from where I grew up. Yeah, so not too far at all.
About as close as you get from the Eastern League. Right?
No, this is one of those trips where if someone were to look at the schedule and see we were in Akron, I didn't tell anybody, no friends or family. I'm like, yeah, I just need a couple of days to study the team and I didn't need to be bothered. But yeah, I usually get, it's not like Dylan Dingler numbers in Akron with the pass list. I think when he first got called up, there was about 1,000 people over the course of a 3-day weekend. Adam Wolf is from Milan, Ohio, not too far away. And so he had about 50 people there this past week. And then Colt Keith from his time in Ohio when he was in Zanesville, he had quite a few folks up as well. So a bit of a homecoming for a lot of the guys, which it's cool to see.
Yeah, we'll get to Erie shortly. But for everybody, for the first time, we have now, and you can super chat us. So if you want to ask us questions and provide some donations, as we're going out to Erie on Tuesday, it will be there Tuesday and Wednesday for the Seawolves home opener. So we're looking forward to that. And so, yeah, if you want to just chip in a few bucks here and there, there's a super chat button on YouTube. So now that we are a channel that can make money, by all means, you don't have to do it. It's not obligated, but if you
want to. No, they have to do it. They have to do it. If they're consuming the content, kick these guys $10 for gas so they can get to Erie.
Yeah.
You know what was wild? Speaking of gas, so I drove to Akron, and the gas prices in Ohio were actually higher than Pennsylvania. First time I've ever seen it.
Yeah,
I was $3.79 a gallon in Akron.
That's more than here.
And when I got to Erie last night, it was like $3.69. So it was like, whoa, what's going on here?
I think it's $3.45.
Yeah, we're going to have to gas up in Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, gas up before you cross the border.
I was just pumped that I checked the radar or the forecast, and I'm like, man, this looks like an awesome week for baseball in Erie.
Yeah, I did a little homework yesterday and went back and found like the past. So our stat portal goes back to 2005. And so I went back and I tried to find all of our opening day temps from that period on. We've only had three opening days in Erie of 60 degrees or above since 2005. And so this will be the fourth this week. And each one of them had crowds over 4,000. So hopefully Erie steps up in a big way this week. But the weather's looking fantastic all week long. Knock on wood, we actually might have a homestand in April where we don't have to touch the tarp. And that is a miracle. We'll remain in the forecast all week. And by the weekend, we're in the 70s.
Man. Yeah, it's just, yeah. And that's the thing too, especially with, I told Chris a few weeks ago, I go, I feel like we should maybe prepare for snow. Because again, every time
it's usually
like,
you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen the home openers where I'm just like, are we making the right decision? Yes. So in this case, I'm glad it worked out. But yeah, Erie, and you had an off day today, which I thought was, is that throw you off a little bit? Just a three game series versus.
So Richmond and Reading were the only two that played on Easter Sunday. I kind of like it. A couple days off. I know there was a few guys that came to the field today and threw, and they're going to actually have a workout tomorrow to try and work out a few kinks from the past series. It's nice having a couple days off because while tomorrow is normally an off day for me, I got to be in the office. So this was nice to actually have a day off after that first road trip. And quite frankly, it's tough to draw on Easter. We've had Easter games at home in the past and people have to go to church there with their families. It's tough to draw those games in the minor leagues. I'm very happy that the way it laid out this year.
So let's just go right into Erie because a lot of our fans are big fans of Colt Keith and a pretty, but our performance yesterday that was by far one of the best, other than the Tiger prospects we've seen so far. Toledo right now is doing a lot of where both Toledo, Erie, all three are doing where their starters are going three or four innings or not just on strict pitch counts, obviously, because they're ramping up. But yesterday, what I saw yesterday, Chris and I divvy up the various teams. So I said, I'll do Toledo, Chris. And I was at the Tigers game. I was covering the Tigers. Yeah. And he's like, I got Erie. And then I just, I think it was within an hour, the game got out of hand. And I just started watching Jason Beck, who sits in front of me, press box. Him and I were both watching Ty Madden and just doing one of those things. We're just like, what is it? Curveball going. And it was insane. And Greg, I know you've witnessed, and they won yesterday 3-2 in 11 innings. That was a hard fought game for them. But comparatively speaking, Friday with the walk fest. I'm sure yesterday was just like you were thanking the gods there.
Yeah. No, Friday was miserable, flat out miserable. That was one of those where I even said on the air, neither team deserves to win this game. It was so bad. 10 walks on each side, I think three or four hit batters between the two teams. And by the time it was all said and done, I think it was the feels like temp of 33. And so it was just awful. And so nobody could get a good grip on the ball. It was terrible. But yesterday was a fun day watching Ty go out there. And there's been a lot of Ty Madden doubters and his fastball's flat and just you hear it all. Everybody giving reasons of why somebody isn't good instead of the reasons why they can be very good. And I thought Ty really came out yesterday and that was a statement game for him. Obviously, the way it ended last season, he started that final game of the year for Erie. It didn't go according to plan. And I think really, you look at him and then you look at the job Brant Herter did two nights ago. I talked to Gabe Alvarez about it quite a bit. And I think we both had the same assessment where those guys just looked so tired at the end of last season that they didn't have anything left in the tank by the end. And to see what he did yesterday coming out and just blowing away the Ducks was just incredible, incredible to watch. And I see what we have on the screen here with, is that him from yesterday? Yep,
that's
I saw the yellow jersey and I'm like, wait a minute, no. You're going for a loop. Yeah, it struck out the first six and they weren't even, the first ball that was put in play was in the fourth inning. He had a pop foul in the third to end that inning and then strikeout to start the fourth, a ground out to short, and a strikeout looking to end his day. But one of the things that that I was very happy to see this year, when I talked to Gabe right before we got started, and I said, what are the starters going to be, 3 and 50 to start? And he goes, no, actually, they're turning it a little loose this year with their first time through the rotation. They were going 4 and 75 as opposed to what they were last year. And one of the big issues that we dealt with last year was we didn't have enough innings available to match how many games we had at the start of the season. So our starters were only going 3 last year to start. So that extra inning and the extra pitches that these guys are having this year is huge. I was happy to see that Gabe Rivas and Ryan Garko and everybody on the pitching side kind of recognize that, hey, we can't leave these teams short on pitching just because of limits, and let's do this sensibly this year. And they did that. And quite frankly, you look at what our starters have done. Madden, 4 innings yesterday. Brant Herter, 2 days ago, 4 innings. And Wilmer Flores, 4 innings. And neither of them, all four, did not allow a run. It was fun to watch this weekend in Akron. Bullpen struggled, but so can we still win the GM's money there? What's
that ended up being the title screen for the YouTube video. It was like, oh, man.
Maybe he should have given us all $100 for making us play a 6 o'clock game for on a getaway day and having to get out of our hotel rooms at noon.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's
stuff that nobody thinks about right there.
Yeah.
I know our guys wanted to win yesterday's game because they're like, it's April, it's cold, ain't nobody going to be there, and they're shooting off fireworks to nobody. And I heard so many players complain about that. I'm like, guys, I get the business side of things, but I agree with you 100%. Yesterday should have been a day. But hey, you know what? Erie got in there and got a W, so that's really all that matters.
There's when we talked to Akil Badu yesterday, that was one of the things that he took a flight. So he left Omaha at 4:30. He got up at 4:30, put the flight out at 7:30, went to his place in Perrysburg, picked up his stuff, and then went to Detroit and was in there. No one saw him until, we didn't know until 25 minutes before the game what happened. And so we're just trying to figure out exactly when he got there, but he came off and he got a couple hits. He got a couple hits today, but that turnaround to play, and then play a game like this is kudos.
It's not easy for those guys when you have to get up there quickly. That's tough sledding. But back to Ty, one of the things, and I don't know if you guys can quite pick it up on video watching what he did yesterday, but he had a confidence about him that I didn't see last year. And he was more poised on the mound. He's not an emotional guy, so it's tough to read between the lines. But I think last year at times he was a little bit nibbly, and you didn't see that. He was going right after guys. And he had a good rapport with Josh Crouch the entire ball game that he was in there. And the fastball, the stadium gun's usually pretty accurate there. Touched 99 twice, 98 once. He was sitting 94 to 96. Slider looked absolutely filthy. And then he threw a couple of changeups where I'm like, okay, that looks a little better than he had last year. Everything was working for him yesterday, and Akron really had no chance. He made them look silly at the plate.
I completely agree with you, Greg. I think that was one of the things that we're going to put this on loop a little bit, because one of the things that I noticed yesterday, he was able to establish the inside part of the plate, which is something he couldn't really do last year consistently.
Correct.
And the first thing Chris noticed too was the leg kick a little bit, Chris. What you were talking about?
Yeah, it stood out to me. I was like, I don't remember that. He used to just bring his knee straight up with kind of his leg, I guess, like at a right angle. And now it's kicking up a little bit or kicking back. And I don't know what different.
You don't have the split screen for us here so we can see the comparison?
Oh, yeah, you know, I should do that. Yeah,
we could do that. But
I don't know if it is just his slider or if he's added a knuckle curve or something like that, because there was a lot of hard down action on his breaking balls that I don't remember last year.
And the fastball, it really had some late life on it. And again, when he got to us last year, that workload for him last year was quite a bit. And so I don't know if he just didn't have that late life on his fastball last year, but you saw it yesterday. He looked really good. And if he can continue to do that, then he's not going to be near very long.
Yeah, he might be at a major league level. That curveball, I'd never seen
that. Yeah, that fastball he just threw there, the little bit of, like, almost had a little bit of rise action on it.
Yeah.
At the end.
Yeah, there's some good tailing action on
it. It was getting on hitters quickly.
And this is where, so I got last year. I can't do the split screen, but we can take you can see the difference a little bit here. And this is against, this is the last,
there's a difference. He gave up a home run.
Yeah.
But look how flat the fastball looks there.
Yeah.
And it's not doing what we saw yesterday. Now, that was a good slide there.
Yeah, but he was like, you're nibbling a little bit.
Yeah, nibble.
It seems like he's fallen off a little bit to the left, too. But yeah, it that's one of the interesting things about this season and a lot of the assignments this year. And I expected Madden to be in Erie, but a lot of guys are repeating levels this year. Flores, I thought, might go to Toledo, but it sounds like they just kept so many non-roster guys from spring that everybody got pushed down a little bit. But you're getting to see these guys for a second straight year, and that happens fairly frequently in the minors, but not necessarily with prospects. So yeah, you can get a good idea at what they've changed and what is different. And
yeah, I mean, for Wilmer, he wasn't dominant in that opening day start. And I'm looking down at my card from that day. Well, they no extra base hits. The walks are what got him into a little bit of trouble. He walked three in those four innings, but he ended up striking out six. With Wilmer, I think it all boils down to the changeup. And once that pitch is fully developed, that's when he gets elevated to Toledo. But I think that sort of exposed him a little bit late in the season last year, was that it wasn't quite there. And it's a pitch he's been working on for a couple of years now. And talking to Gabe Alvarez about it, he thought it was much improved, and seems like the organization agrees it was much improved over what he did last year. And so I think that's positive steps in the right direction for Wilmer. But they don't seem to be rushing him. They're not really rushing any of those guys right now. If they were rushing him, they would have all started at Toledo. I think they just, there's a big difference when we see Gavin Williams, and that's a guy you're like, okay, that guy has no business in AA at all. That kid is rock solid. And I don't know what the Guardians could have told him to say, let's send you back to Akron after the numbers you put up. Yeah, that doesn't quite equate, but you want to see that kind of level of dominance before you start pushing a young guy up. And Ty, obviously yesterday, looked equally as good as Gavin Williams did a couple of nights ago. I think Williams had struck out nine and Ty bested that with 10, but Wilmer's still a little bit of a work in progress. The pure stuff is there. He was again, poised on the mound the other day, but he just wasn't as comfortable, and it could have been opening day jitters. So I'm really looking forward to his second start to see how he looks, but he just, again, solid start, nothing that really jumped out at you. And I'm not terribly surprised to see him here.
Speaking of kind of things we were surprised to see, was Trey Cruz starting in center field and then Feliciano starting the outfield, and both have never played the outfield. And yet, I mean, I know why. Perhaps it's because mother is an invention of or however you say that terminology. The Tigers are trying to get creative. And I understand why, because you have Cole Keith there, Gage Workman. So we're going to put Cruz. And from all accounts, I ended up looking back and he did a pretty good job, and he's off to a good start. He's already hitting 375. He's 3-for-8 to start the season. Greg, this is a guy who I know that the Tigers, in terms of he's not been on prospect radar side, but Chris noticed yesterday something is in terms of his hitting mechanics seem a little different.
He just overall seems more mature off the field and on the field. And you can't argue with what he did those first two. He only played two of the three games in Akron. He went 0-for-3 the first night, but drew two big walks. So I know he had 81 walks a season ago, but drew two big walks, and then one of those was with the bases loaded. So he's showing patience at the plate. And then yesterday, I mean, the two doubles he had off the wall, if that's any other ballpark or just a little warmer, those are a couple of home runs. So the ball's jumping off his bat very nicely. And then opening day, I think, Rod, you may have texted me about Cruz, because he had started in center that day. And the first, he saved a run in the first inning. Akron had a runner at second, and Brian Laudestita set one to straightaway center, but left center. He was playing towards right, and his closing speed, I'm like, okay, when it came off the bat, I'm like, Akron's taking the lead in this inning. And all of a sudden, Cruz just chases it down and makes the catch. When Gabe told me prior to the season starting, we're getting Cruz back and we're going to actually play him a little bit in center field, I'm like, okay, let's see how that goes. He goes, he's actually looked pretty good in spring training. So I guess they started him a little bit down there. And look, the bloodlines are there. He's a ball player. He's got speed and he's got some good instincts, and his reads on the balls were very good. Again, short sample size, but I like what I see out there. Feliciano, I know Gabe, one of the things that Gabe was really pushing for was to have three catchers on the roster coming out of spring. And he's got that with Rodriguez, Crouch, and Feliciano. Mario, he's not fast in the outfield, but he wasn't a liability by any means. You're going to see him at first base a little bit too, I would imagine, at some point. So he's a guy that they value that can go in multiple positions. And so that's one of the big things organizationally right now, is they're looking for those type of players who can be plug and play at multiple different spots. And the more spots you can play in the minor leagues and show more value to the organization, then you don't know when you're that next guy that gets up there. If you've pigeonholed yourself into that one position, that's all I'm going to play, that's all I know how to do, you might not get that opportunity as opposed to a guy who's playing two, three, maybe four positions.
Yeah, one of the things that I found interesting in the game yesterday, Josh Kraut was wearing it a little bit. He was 0 for 4 with 4 strikeouts.
Yeah, tough day.
And then there was looked like they got crossed up and it was a pass ball and then a throwing error. It was like, oh man, like he's having a tough, and then he goes out and he gets the game winning hit. And I was like, hey, that's nice maturity or whatever you want to call it, but not getting down after such a rough night. I was impressed with that.
Yeah, no, it was funny because I turned to my broadcast partner. I'm like, well, this is going to be an interesting at bat to start the 11th inning. It's either going to go really well or really poorly. And he did not look good in his first four at bats yesterday. It was like, okay, this isn't good Josh Crouch at all at the plate. And he seemed like he was very tentative, a lot of check swings, like unsure of himself at the plate yesterday. And then he gets in there in the 11th inning and just shoots one through the side and puts Erie back on top. Again, offensively, he's a work in progress. We saw that last year when he was up with Erie. Yeah, had a big home run down the stretch for the Seawolves, but just didn't look quite ready at the plate yet. So I think it's going to take some time for him. And there's no shame in that. But he's looked solid behind the plate in the two games he's caught. Guys are comfortable throwing to him. And I know the organization's very high on him. And it's, the interesting thing is going to be you've got three catches on this roster right now. All are expected to play quite a bit. What is going to happen when Dylan Dingler gets back? I'm guessing you guys got a nice donation because the looks on your faces.
So wait, I got a drop for that. I actually created a drop for that. Hold on, let me find it.
All right.
Yes. Thank you for the 1999 JP Jonah. Shout out to you.
That's outstanding. Thank you so much.
Can you like touch them all time from one of my calls? That's when you. Get
oh, you know what? That's actually a really good idea.
Every time you give a donation. I'll be donating. I'm going to start just like giving Venmoing like pennies so I could just tune into you guys and
touch them all time.
Nice. I'd like to like start charging us for your trademark phrase.
Buffer.
Michael Buffer. One of the tough things about there were just so many walks this weekend that it was kind of like nobody really got a chance to hit a ton. I think Colt Keith had the big double on the opening night.
Yeah.
But only one other hit. Just not a ton of hitting going on because of all the walks. So it's walks for sure, but.
Yeah, and yesterday we finished with 8 hits in the game, so that eclipsed the total of both of the first two games. It was 3-3 and then 8. And you chalk up some of it to the cold, but a lot of it to the walks. Pitchers on both sides had a very hard time finding the strike zone, more so on Akron than on Erie. I don't know what they ended up walk-wise with yesterday. So both teams were at 4 yesterday, so much more understandable numbers there than what we had 2 nights ago. But yeah, it's tough. You're dealing with cold temperatures. You're sitting there, and you're especially 2 nights ago, 35 degrees and you're sitting there seeing 6-7 pitches and at that and you're not even swinging. It was not good baseball all around, but it's tough to hit in that situation because you don't know when a strike is coming. Going to come. And clearly 2 nights ago, it didn't come.
I was just going to say, even with the struggle grip. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of the things, like you mentioned earlier, you talked about Brant Herder and what you saw from Brant Herder last year was not what we saw in West Michigan or what they saw in Lakeland last year. He just wasn't. And he's not a guy with like great stuff, but in the lower levels, he was really locating well. And it seemed like he did that more in his debut, but he still walked a couple guys because I think it was super cold, but I think you got a better look at him. But then poor Dylan Smith comes in his Double-A debut and it's just a nightmare. He can't seem to locate at all. And it was, I felt really bad for him.
Dylan came in and before he even threw his first Double-A pitch, there was a pitch clock violation on him.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh boy, this is not good for a guy making his debut. Just gets into the game. We've got a lead at the time. And then boom, pitch clock violation. I'm like, oh, this is not going to be pretty. Yeah. He came in and it was pretty ugly for him. Like, he walked the bases loaded and then got an out, but then gave up the 2-run single and ended up giving up the 2 runs that day. Then they brought Yaya in and he struck out a pair. But yeah, that was a tough outing for him. I'll be interested to see. I'm trying to think, is he going Wednesday? Maybe. I'm not sure. It's Gibson Long tomorrow, Tuesday. And then I can't remember Flores and Dylan are one of those, either Wednesday, Thursday, or whatever. Might be Wednesday. You guys might be lucky there.
That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. Another guy that came, a new guy to your bullpen, Lane Henderson, who came in the minor league draft, Chris.
Yeah, we're 5. Yeah.
Corpus Christi or something.
Yeah, we saw him yesterday. He looked good. Where you go? He went 2 innings. He went the
about 4.
Came in after Lesher. So he did the 6th and the 7th. Struck out 4, gave up a single, gave up a walk. He's got violent delivery.
Yeah.
My goodness. He is over the top, like just straight over the top. And then his head almost looks like it's going to hit the ground on his follow through. Wow.
That's what
this is pretty wild to watch here. But yeah, no, he looked fine yesterday. One of the knocks on him was command issues coming into this season. And we saw the one walk, but he seemed like he was commanding everything pretty well. Really good changeup. That was a devastating pitch for him in the series when he pitched those two innings. So yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him out there again. But I think for a guy like that, like with any minor league bullpen guy, it's consistency. And if you show consistency, you're going to get elevated. If you don't, then you're going to be stuck at a level. But yeah, he's an interesting guy to watch because I didn't quite know what to expect. And we pulled up some video on him after opening day because we figured he was going to pitch one of the next two, and he did. And it's okay. There's something there. I don't know if his arm's going to go flying off his shoulder and hit the batter in the head that way, but it's a violent delivery, but his stuff's good. And so we'll see what he can do. But I like him in that bullpen for sure.
It reminds me of Tom Browning, the former Reds pitcher, a little bit, where he kind of fallen off a little bit, almost to a certain extent, when he falls off towards first base side. And then I remember the game where he broke his arm on national television. Oh.
We don't need that.
Yeah, we don't need that.
That doesn't happen in Lane.
No. But Erie, I mean, one thing about the Seawolves roster, and this is an example, we were just talking about this with Dan Heastie, the voice of the West Michigan Whitecaps, is that Erie has gotten, because the Tigers addressed the minor leagues, several minor league signings for AAA, it seems like Erie's got a look and feel to it. For example, I honestly thought Chance Kirby was going to start in Toledo because
we all did.
He dominated the last 2 months. He's one of the reasons why I thought that he was able to win the division last year, because of him being able to just come out and either start or out of the bullpen. He was such an effective pitcher. But in terms of I really think this year, even with the influx of possible guys from high A, in some aspects, I think, Greg, this is a team that could compete or win the division again.
No, I agree. And Gabe has said as much. He was very happy with his team as it broke camp. I think the Tigers did a good thing by going out and signing guys for Toledo. And I'm sure there are plenty of guys, and I talked to a few of the guys in our clubhouse, like, look, they know they probably have pitched or hit well enough to be at the AAA level. And it's just simply a numbers game and a new regime. And it's unfortunate for a guy like Kirby. It's unfortunate for a guy like Johnny Valente. And even an Adam Wolf, who went out and was in big league camp for a little while with the Tigers this spring, who put together, from what everybody has said, a pretty good spring training, and to have him back here this season. I think that there are two ways to approach that as a player. You can sit there and you can be the pouty pants guy in the corner and not happy at all, or you can use it as a little extra motivation. And the sheer reality is, and this is not an indictment on Tiger regime's past, but I guess it is, we're not graduating players anymore. And for a long time in the organization, it was, okay, I've got my report card from Lakeland. Now I'm going to go up to the next level. And now I pitched to you in Erie. Here we go. You get an A+. You're going up to Toledo next year. That's gone. Those days are done. And so now is a matter of, what have you done for me lately? And there is an onus upon all of these guys to produce at a high level. And if you don't produce, you're going to be out. And I understand that's harsh, but that is the business side of this. And especially now with domestic roster limits, where they are currently and where they will be in the future, you have the draft every year in, when are we drafting now? July?
July 17th, yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
If you're not a guy, and you become expendable very quickly now. And that wasn't the case in the past, even more so now. And so a lot of these guys who are here need to produce in order to, number one, try to get to that next level. Number two, to keep a job. And I think that is what makes good organizations of holding guys accountable. It's not just, I did well at a year in A ball. I'm going to go up to high A. I did a year there. I'm going to go to double A. I may only put 250 in A ball, but they're going to shoot me up anyways. And those days are done. And I think once players realize that, and I think most of them have, because, you know, when Ryan Garko has come in, and last year, what happened? All four affiliates over 500. When was the last time that happened? I know you guys had talked about that. It had been decades since that had happened. There's accountability. There's accountability on the coaches. And there's accountability on the players. And I think overall that helps the health of the organization.
Speaking of which, one of the things that we got when we were at the West Michigan Media Day was something as simple as, and Chase Young and Isaac Pacheco were both, they're very, very adamant about it. And that's the difference in food. Food.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how that all works in here. Each level is a little different, but
so I can tell you a little bit about that, Rod. So In the past, the Tigers had, and it's not unique to the Tigers, a lot of organizations, the strength and conditioning coach would be in charge of the meals. So when the player development license stuff happened a couple of years ago, before that, there was X amount of dollars that were given to each affiliate and the clubhouse manager sourced the meal. Then the strength coaches took over the meal sourcing, I want to say probably 18 or 19, somewhere in there. And they did that up until this year. And let's face it, at the end of the day, those guys are there to train and get guys to stay on the field physically. They're not guys that know how to order catering. They know nutrition, but they're not a nutritionist. They're not a dietitian. And so I think that was a big disconnect at all levels of the organization and in all levels of baseball, for that matter, with across the minor leagues. The Phillies were one of the big ones to start with doing all the meals in a big way. And they had spent like $2 million on minor league meals when they first started it. This was 10 years ago. But now every affiliate has a dietitian. And so Toledo's got one. We've got one. West Michigan and then Lakeland, obviously, down at the complex has theirs. And that's been huge. And I went through and I looked at the spread in the clubhouse the past couple of days. And I'm like, all right, this is an improvement. It's a whole new structure of eating. And every week, every player is going to have a meeting with the dietitian and talk about their meals and what they're doing. Are they feeling sluggish? Are they feeling good? You know, what can we tweak in your meal plan to get you to the right spot that you need to be? And so there's a big emphasis on that in the organization. And I think it's going to be great overall. And it takes the onus away from the player development side of the staffing and puts it into a professional human being who knows dieting, nutrition, and what these guys need in their bodies. So like I said, it was like high quality spreads from what I saw this past week in Akron. And that's a good thing overall. And look, I've been in the minor leagues for 20 years now. I can remember being in with the Mahoney Valley Scrappers and pregame meal was peanut butter and jelly. And that's what you got. And you were lucky to get something after the game. It was concession food they would bring down after games back in short season A ball back in the day. Even when I got to Erie, and for the long time, clubhouse managers were the one sourcing the food. If you're a clubby and you're only making X amount of dollars, and you're what are you going to be able to do with that little amount of money that you get for food? And so the system was broken for a long time. And a few teams started it. And now you're seeing more and more and more going with some type of nutritionist, dietitian at most levels in the minor leagues. And that's a good thing because it's sorely needed. Now, what they eat off the field, that's on them. But whether or not the stadium, it's going to be darn good food.
Are they gonna be eating any pepperoni balls?
So they did eat some pepperoni balls on media day. Don't tell Amanda, our dietitian, that.
They're gonna be there on Tuesday, Wednesday. The pepperoni
What's
balls.
That? The pepperoni. Oh balls? Yeah, we sell them every night.
All right, I have to try them.
Because I was gonna ask you about that.
We're selling too many shirts. This is the problem right now. We sold out of 3 shirts.
Oh man. See, is that a thing with his? In terms of food, because I don't remember this being, is this something that we just missed last year or something? Or is this a regional thing that's been around for a long time?
It's been around forever in Erie. Me being the health nut that I am these days, I don't eat stuff like that very often. I had one the other day, but yeah, it's just kind of a dish that's synonymous with Erie. This company that we're working with, Stanganelli's, they stuff their balls with all kinds of different things. I asked them, we went in there and we did a shoot with Sewell. I was like, what's the wildest thing you've ever done in a pepperoni, like in ball form? They've done scrambled eggs. They've done anchovies for Lent. That's I know. Hey, look, I'll eat raw anchovies when they're over in Europe, right out of the ocean. I'm not eating them if you're laying out of a can. But yeah, they stuff them with all different kinds of things. And it's a local company. And these two guys bought it about 20 years ago and they've grown it. The company you work for, they were selling them on QVC for a while. So really? It's between that, the ox roast and the Smith's hot dogs. Everything that I don't eat is what everybody loves to eat here. But yeah, we sell them at the ballpark and it was cool. Got seeing them from dough to end and going to this factory and watching these folks slinging ball. They're all handmade. So it's pretty cool. Oh, wow. But it's just a regional dish here in Erie and people love them. You go to the grocery store and you see there's a whole freezer section at the Giant Eagle with just all these Stanganelli's products. They do pastas, they do breads, they do all this stuff and pepperoni balls. So it's a local delicacy, I guess.
That's definitely, yeah.
Yes, that's the hat.
Yeah, that's the, this, that hat has been talked about among some of our Discord people, they really love the new logo for this, and I will more likely be purchasing one this week. I don't really have a lot of the food collection hats because some of them just made no sense to me because I have no tie. I think the Syracuse one was like the scramble. I don't know, something weird. Some of the regional foods, I'm just like,
yeah.
But this right here is a good looking hat. And also, you know what? I should pull up the picture of what they exactly look like because I have that here because now all of a sudden I wanted to see that. Like, all right, what am I going to be in Seattle? And look at this. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's if you can. Yeah. Here's Adam Wolf eating a pepperoni bowl.
Yeah, he's slamming it down. Yeah.
They will.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And thankfully, we actually got. So they wore the new Howling Dead jerseys on opening day. We didn't have enough hats for everybody.
Wow.
We have. So our poor merch director. She pulls enough hats for the team every year. And so she bases it on the hat sizes of the previous couple seasons. So she pulls the size. We had more than enough hats for the guys. Yeah, we have a team with some large heads this year. And what's the one thing we didn't have in stock? Howling Dead large hats. Like we sold through so many of them. And we have two guys that have a size 8 head in the clubhouse. I'm like, wow, that's a large hat. So thankfully, knock on wood, that they will be here in time so we can actually wear the correct uniform combo on Thursday when they debut on the field here. But they are sharp. And but again, we can't, between the Howling Dead and the pepperoni balls, we literally cannot keep stuff in stock. It is wild.
That's awesome. Yeah. People definitely love those logos. That's funny. I'm in my head, the wheels are spinning about who's new on the roster this year, who might have. I'm thinking Diego Rincones, maybe. Who else might have a size 8 head? But
yeah. We have some large guys in the clubhouse. Yeah. Look, I'm always the shortest guy in the room. Maybe unless it's like Yaya, I can see him basically. Kirby's a little taller than me, but I'm looking up at everybody. We have three pitchers who are 6'6". Yeah, yep. Large human beings. Wolf and Henderson, I believe, are both 6'6".
Flores is pretty tall too. Right?
Flores 6'4". Berger's like 6'5".
Alvarado is pretty big. I don't know if he's there right now or if he's rehabbing.
Yeah, he's not with us yet. He's on the roster, but not here yet. Gargantuan human beings.
One of the things I wanted to play this piece of audio for you, Greg. I was wondering, with now you have a new assistant this year, if you guys want to do something along these lines to play it for us.
From Santo.
See here.
What Dan did?
Yeah.
Hello, friends. Beautiful Saturday afternoon in Comstock Park. This is inning number 7. Still in the front 9, if you will. Eric Pinales hails from San Cristobal.
All I want to know is, do they have to pay royalty rights in West Michigan?
It's about 30 kilometers from Santo Domingo. And the Dominican Republic.
Think about that. Yeah, it's...
Right now, looking at a pitch from about 60 feet, 6 inches.
Yeah, I had not heard this yet.
Wait,
yeah, they really let...
Yeah, they let
no
it,
idea how that
they,
went.
They let this thing ride, huh? Holy smokes.
Yeah, well, a good, like, 2 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
I struggled a lot in 2022 with this control.
The Nick was going for
a
like
fine hit. Deep to left center.
Was he trying to be Ian Baker Finch too?
Lucas Dunn into second base. Exquisite. A one-out double here in the 7th.
An excellent approach to that hit. Patient, able to line it up, deposit it into left center field.
Got it into the short grass out there. Aren't you happy that doesn't sound like that every single day?
Put me to sleep. Felt like a lullaby.
We were...
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, now that I went out there for opening day. I'm excited. This is our first Erie opening day, at least my first Erie opening. Yeah. So I'm excited for that. I went to West Michigan, and I was just chatting it up with Dan and Nate before the game. And somebody came in and said, hey, we got a hot mic going on. People down there are talking about salty language. We're like, oh, no. I thought the guy was just messing with us. I thought it was like, this is something you do to announcers. But no, apparently it wasn't us. We found out it wasn't us, but there was some other hot mic going into like the suites where people were hearing a bunch of people swear. And, oh God, it seems like an announcer nightmare. I was like, just
well, yeah, that's always a fear.
I never understood that. Just to...
yeah, you, the mic is always hot, as I tell people.
Yeah, that's why mindfulness.
As you guys know, our director of entertainment, Jason Doherty, the other day we were testing the radio equipment, and I don't know how Greg Coleman didn't hear this in his office. Sam and I are trying everything on. We're making sure everything works for my LBTV, and Jason comes, I want to give it a shot. He gets on the headset. He forgot to pot himself down in the entire ballpark and drops, that bottle was effing crushed. But he said the word, and I'm like, I'm like just watching down near the stadium club entrance to see like Greg Coleman sprint out like Hulk Hogan and rip off his shirt. Thankfully, now I've outed Jason on this, so Coleman's going to find out. But yeah, I said, Jason, don't you have that headset on again? And you are not to be in this radio booth ever. And just make sure I'm on the air. That's your only worry.
Let's quickly go through what happened with Toledo. The Mud Hens were actually off to a really good start in terms of their offense and sharing the same traits that Erie is in the sense that, yes, was Akron's pitching bad? Yes, it was. But 19 walks through three games. Hey, that's not common among the affiliates at all. And Malloy, by the way, Malloy had a really good series. He has now hit safely in four straight, Chris, or something like that. Or
he's definitely been on base in every game. I'm not sure if he's.
I did give you guys some love on the air for that walk stat that you had given.
Oh, yeah. I looked at I. So you know what I did? I literally went through every.
What was it? Eight games last year to get to the amount of walks in two or something like that.
Correct. So I went through every single log. I went to the Erie website, went through and took every game and just wrote it down in a notepad and just. And I showed Chris how I did the math.
Yeah, the math. Yeah.
Yeah, and no, it's but
like, you remind me of Dave Littlefield now.
Oh, I don't know, but is that a good thing?
I take it for what it's worth. But no, I would go down and I'd see Dave, and he would have his little like manila folder. And he would open it up and it's like post-it notes everywhere. I'm like, how does this guy keep anything straight? Yeah, but that your post-it notes remind me of.
Yeah, but the Toledo, and one of the things that we noticed at Toledo right away is that you have Parker Meadows, who did so well last year in here. He had a really good spring. But this is a team that the Mudhens, I think, also, just like Erie, this is a veteran-esque team that are going to really, I think, be competitive in terms of maybe even make the playoffs. But the same thing applies to where their bullpen is on this. Essentially, the bullpen is going to be back and forth between Detroit a little bit. But the starters, I don't know. Like the one thing I noticed about opening weekend with the starters is that they don't really have defined, I guess, quote unquote, if you will. It just seems like it's going to be a, unlike Erie, where Erie, you see these, there's going to be the start, like Madden's a starter, Dylan Smith's a starter. But it just seems like could be lacking. It just seems like it's lacking right now for Toledo a little bit in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, they have Erie definitely has the more upside in terms of the starting pitchers there. We saw Brennan Hanafy. Greg probably saw last year with Bowie.
Yeah.
We might not remember much about him because he's not a script, but it was like 91, 93 with a pretty good changeup, and he was the opening day starter in Toledo. Fido has
Where's
pitched
Prosecco?
Well.
My wife was walking by with a first glass of Prosecco, and I didn't get off of
it. You know what? Forgive my.
You can say hi to the guys.
Hi, Megan.
Good to see you.
Likewise.
All right, she'll drink you for a second. She's got the day off tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I guess that's one perk of Catholic higher education. They give you like 80 days around Easter that you can take off.
That's sad.
Resurrect early. But so Viedo pitched today. We don't really know what role he's going to have going forward. He was a little bit better today than he was in his first outing. His fastball was up to 94, and his slider was really good today, where it was just average in the first. But we've seen him in the big leagues before. Reese Olson has really struggled in his first two outings, and
that shocks me.
It's a little bit of what, and we do have to remember that he was dealing with some, I don't know exactly what it was, shoulder soreness.
Oh, elbow. It was elbow.
So elbow or shoulder? I can't remember.
But yeah, it's kind of he's been getting hit hard. He's not walking a ton of people. He's getting his strikeouts. He puts in the zone and they're hitting it. So it's been a rough start for him, but we know he's pretty talented. So hopefully he can turn that around. But yeah, it's I don't know. I can't even think who else has been starting for him.
Yeah, Walton's up to 96, 90, 97, 98. I think he had 98 really? A couple times. Yeah.
Wow. Which, okay.
Yeah, so a velocity increase there from last year from Erie. I was going to ask you, because I think he was like, what, sitting 93, 94 in Erie last year?
Around there. I was say the velocity is starting to tick up after. You see, the thing about Reese is, remember last year, he wasn't necessarily dominant out of the gate. Mm-hmm. It took him a while, and that was year two of double A for him. So it took him a while to get there. So I just wonder if he's got to work out the kinks of a new level. Look, the stuff is there. He's got good stuff. And we saw that last year. When he's on, he's virtually unhittable. He'll give up a couple of home runs because, you know, he'll hang one here or there. But the talent's there. And they just got to find a way to get him, I guess, more up to speed quicker when he gets these, when he makes those jumps. Because if he does what he has done in Toledo up into the big leagues, you're not going to be there very long. But I think he's going to be fine, but that is surprising to see he has struggled to this extent.
Yeah, and then you talked about the bullpen, Raj. We did see when the rosters were announced, I was like, I'm surprised Zabala is in Erie, and then he wasn't. He was like randomly showed up in Toledo. We're like, huh, I didn't see the move there. But he's got a huge arm, but we saw today it's not always in the zone. But Magno came up and had a really nice outing, didn't he, Raj? You watched that.
Yeah, his first inning was 11 pitches, 10 for strikes, and one ball. And he showed really good command, hitting the outside edges, was able to come inside a few times. And Magno was a guy who I thought really did a really good job when he got called up to Erie last year, coming in virtually. This guy came, I think like Hurdler too, three levels last year. And
yeah,
this is a guy, I thought maybe he'd start the season in Erie.
We did too. And for a while that was where he was, I believe, slated to be. And then it just, the numbers game just kept pushing guys back and pushing guys back. Yeah. The roster I had gotten internally prior to the season, and you just knew there was going to be movement happening. And Zabala was a prime example. One of the reasons that he was going to be potentially slated for double A was because he's had command issues. And then from what Gabe told me, his last spring training outing, pitched two innings, six up, six down, six Ks. And they were like, okay. And he's hitting 98, 99. All right, get him up to Toledo. Yeah. And that makes sense. He's a guy with a little bit of experience. You understand that. If the command issues are a big problem for him in Toledo, you could totally see a guy like that coming here once again. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Bullpen, minor league bullpens are always a crapshoot. They really are. You know, Yaya gave up a wall scraper the other night. Otherwise looked great. Billy Lesher. I still can't quite figure out Billy. He's got some good stuff at times, and then other times you're just like, where's the guy I saw yesterday? There's going to be some guys breathing down the neck of bullpen guys in Toledo, and namely, I think Adam Wolf is probably the first guy I would say would be. And heck, Angel de Jesus. Guy was in the big leagues last year. He's in our bullpen now. That just shows you the number and the volume of guys that have been signed.
Yeah, and you saw Brendan White plenty last year, and he's so far so good in Toledo. So yeah, there's some options. It's just
he's going to different 2 months. In my humble opinion, and I know nothing. This is just me. If he does in Toledo what he did last year in Erie, he's going to be in the big leagues before you know it. Yeah, that's one guy that AJ Hinch loves. The organization loves him. He's going to get some opportunities, I think, and probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he's on the 40 man, so that always helps. Right? Yeah. You're like, yeah, we'll call him. He's pitching. He's on the 40. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I did want to take a quick look at Lakeland. Not much to Lakeland's got a lot of like 19-year-old arms. We were talking about this earlier last week. But there was Winsteel Perez, who's on a rehab assignment down in Lakeland. I'm not sure. Do you think, Greg, at some point you might see him up in Erie again?
I don't know anything.
Put you on the spot there, but I know nothing.
You know nothing until I get a roster email from Daniel Craigo that says this player is coming here. So we'll leave it at that.
But a couple things worth mentioning, too. Mangelson has been put in left field, so he was out in left. And then Jose de la Cruz, who started today, went 3-for-3, which he needs to get off to a really good start. He's the guy who's gotten forgotten about as far as prospect status goes. And this is a guy a couple years ago was, this is going to be I don't want to say can't miss, but he was getting there. But he struggled last year. Hopefully he puts some more consistency. But the stat of the day that Chris posted on for Lakeland, what was that? Gold. And
that's a rough stat of the day.
That's a rough stat of the day, which was. Okay. Yeah, what was that, Chris? Go ahead.
Yeah, Luke Gold and Peyton Graham went 0-for-8 with 8 strikeouts. It was not a great day for last year infield draft picks, for at least in that level. But there are many other things to point out down there. Troy Melton the other day was hitting 98 in his first inning, and he was their fourth rounder last year. third pick, I think. Now, I have no idea if it's an effective fastball or if it's just really hard, but that was interesting to see. And then you got guys like Ulysses Campos, who had a pretty interesting outing, and Marcano. A couple of younger guys that are under the radar, but will probably be making their way through the system this year and in next year. So there's some fun down there.
What a great name, Ulysses, huh?
Wow.
Yeah, Ulysses Campos. And Santana's still down there. He's off to a relatively slow start, but it's three games. What can you say? And they're playing Tampa. The Yankees always have a bunch of weirdo arms that are really good for some reason. So,
Chris, I don't know if you know this, but it only takes three games for fans to label somebody as either the next superstar or a duck.
Bring them up.
Bring them up.
I'm in. So, Chris, celebrated our first bring them up.
Was it with Parker Meadows?
Yeah, Parker Meadows. Yeah.
Oh, Parker got well. We had it all last night on the Seawolves.
Yep,
with Madden.
Some of the responses on there.
But yeah.
No, like you get with Madden. We've had it with Malloy. We had it with Lipsius. We've had it with Meadows. With people bring him up. It's just the way it goes. But
you bring up God, and this is something I do want to touch on. But I give Austin Meadows a lot of credit for being as open as he is with the mental health struggles. And I was flat out appalled by some of the comments I saw on Twitter yesterday about people. And it's you don't know what it's like. First, if you don't struggle with mental health issues, you don't know what that's like. And for them, for anybody that calls themselves a fan to be piling on that guy who has had struggles in his life. So I give him a lot of credit. And I give the organization credit. I thought Scott Harris handled it with great class. And that was good to see. And I do hope he gets better because this is bigger than baseball.
Right. Exactly. And then, some of the comments yesterday, and there was somebody on our Discord, we had a block. Because we were just, he was basically he got, this person. Yeah, got
24 hour timeout.
Yeah, 24 hour timeout. But okay. But still, nevertheless, I don't have patience for that whatsoever. As somebody, myself, who have experienced it firsthand.
Yeah, and, right here. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's a stigma, even in the Hispanic community too, where it's just like it's not talked about very often as openly as it is now. And so for him, we just hope nothing. Everything but the best, and hopefully everything gets better for him. So,
I've been fortunate to have never dealt with anxiety, but depression since I was a little kid, and like all that stuff, I can't think of where I would want to be less if I had anxiety than in a professional sports environment, where just thousands of eyes are looking at you, and you feel like everything you do. I caught Daniel Bard again recently, which is a real bummer, and you just think back to like Dontrell Willis, what he went through.
Yeah.
When and it just you just die for this.
And I saw that firsthand when they sent him down to Erie that year.
That's right.
Just to see his struggles was just that was tough to watch because Dontrell I remember was watching him pitch in the World Series and then to see him and where he had become is tough. And a lot of people don't realize that all these organizations have and the Tigers do as well with the mental skills folks that can help players out. And sometimes it's more than they can handle. And obviously with Austin, it's an IL stint for him, probably just to work some things out. But they have mental health assistance for all these guys. And I'm not sure who it is now in the minor league level. It used to be Brian Peterson, but he's no longer in the organization. But he would come three or four times to each affiliate and just be there for the guys. And so every organization has people like that. And I do think that they are really starting to take this very seriously because this is a game where, gosh, there's ups and downs and so many highs and so many lows, and it can be an emotional roller coaster from one day to the next. And to see that these organizations aren't taking this seriously is a good thing. And I think Major League Baseball as a whole is starting to take this more seriously.
Yeah. And again, there's so much more data out there for it too. And that helps.
Correct.
And people will talk about their experiences and having that kind of the testimonials, if you will, for lack of a better word, I think that goes a long way because it shows that players are not robots and we can root for the jersey. Correct. Root for the jersey. But also, that person is there's somebody in that jersey. So,
yeah, you can pay a guy, you can make the argument you're making $40 million a year. How can you not be happy? How can you have this and how can you have that? You know what people do?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's you got to treat it like it's different, but you got to treat it just like any other injury, right? Like this is something that is making you not be able to play to your fullest ability. Now that won't stop. Fans will complain about injuries too. I can look at the news about Jackson Job, but yeah.
So I, you went off again, this is just why I've never, you bring up injuries and until you have one, you don't know what that's like. But you always see NFL players or even baseball, you pull a groin and I'm like, how painful could a groin be? And then about 4 years ago, I was running and I pulled my groin and that was about as unpleasant as it could be. So I had a new respect for anybody who ever has a pulled groin in professional sports, because I couldn't even walk around the house. It was that bad. Yeah. You know, people complain about injuries all the time and it's, well, why is it taking this guy so long to get back? And it's everybody's body heals differently. I can give you each a paper cut on your arm right now, and I bet one of you would heal quicker than the other. It's life.
And yeah, if you go, you let us take 15 swings in the cage on Tuesday. Yeah. We'll see how long you survive before breaking something.
Oh, my spleen. Yeah, I just wish fans a lot of times would just chill out with some of these things. And even the pressure on these minor league guys, they don't want to go on Twitter and see call them up every time they have a base hit. Let's pump the brakes a little bit here.
Yeah. So speaking of bumping the brakes, if you want to donate to the Super Chat, by the way, if you want to help us, again, there's a Super Chat feature available on the Tiger Minor League side of things. So if you want to donate, great. If not, no big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. Give him money.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate that. We did get a question. Is it your opinion that over all the hitting development for Detroit kids are getting better or the same, or just he was just curious. This is a question from our friend Stop It.
So yeah, the overall development.
What's the question? Is the overall? I think they're trying to make changes. I think the jury's still out. There was a lot made of the hitting situation up in Detroit last year. From a minor league hitting coach standpoint, I think they got some really good guys teaching it right now. Unfortunately, we lost John Murray in here in Erie, and now we have Francisco Contreras. So I don't know Francisco all that well yet, but I do think there's so many more resources available for these guys now from a hitting side of things, and just by the sheer volume of boxes that show up with every little gadget and gizmo to try and teach these guys different ways to hit. I've been encouraged early from an Erie side of things. Obviously, a couple of games there were some high strikeout numbers because of the starting pitchers, but the approaches at the plate have for the most part been a little better through a short period of time. I think we saw that in Erie all last season with Johnny Marion here. And why am I blanking on Toledo's hitting coach? He was in Erie. Mel Hughes. Is he still the head? Yeah.
Oh,
Where's he up in the big leagues now?
I think he's up in the big leagues. I think Mike Hessman. Okay. Yeah, Mike Hessman's.
Hessman's back down. Yeah. We had Hess here before, so he's great with the young guys. And the philosophy is going to be the strikeouts have got to go, and we need the ball put in play. And I think you're going to see, and we're already starting to see that now with how these rosters are made up in the minor leagues and who's going to be getting the playing time and who isn't. If you're going to be a guy that strikes out 3, 4, 5 times a night, you're not going to see the field as much. And so I think there's an onus on that as well. But I do think the overall philosophy is starting to change. We're not there yet in the minor leagues, but you can absolutely see a difference. And it's even down to like how we're using pitching machines a lot more during batting practice now to simulate different pitches. It's getting better.
Yeah, I was just going to say that seems like something that's a development. And so so Tuesday is opening night in Erie.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So this is, we got the first two promotions. So if you get there on Tuesday, you get a magnet, first 1,000 fans get it. And the second day is Howl at Noon. If you get a chance to do the Stadium Club Buffet, $30. Greg, promote this as much as you can, because this is a good deal.
No, absolutely. The Stadium Club is $30 for all you can eat hot dogs and sausages and Pepsi drinks. So that's a good one there. $2 Thursday. You talk about a night. I hope we're prepared for this staffing wise, because it's going to be 70 degrees and probably our first 70 degree day of the year. And it's $2 beers. So we might get crushed, but that's also the debut of the Howling Dead. And of course, I didn't have any Howling Dead stuff to show off, but that's the debut there. Schedule posters on Friday. Not a ton promotionally going on the first week, because generally speaking, you don't put a whole lot because you're usually getting 40 degree temps. But Jackie Robinson Day on Saturday, we've partnered with 100 Black Men of Erie. Is that who we got on there?
Yeah.
Yes, that's who it is. So we're partnering with them on that. It's a rally tell giveaway. And then Sunday is just our normal Sunday routine of family fun day and catch on the field. But yeah, Thursday opening night and Thursday night, we're going to get crushed. So hope to see a lot of people out there. And we always say to those who are Tiger fans in either Michigan or Toledo, we're not that far away. It's worth it to come out and check out the ballpark here in Erie and see a lot of really good talent. Yeah, that's the Howling Dead stuff there. Yeah. Very cool.
So very cool that the script is, I think, my favorite part about the jersey. So we'll be out there Tuesday and Wednesday. If you are in the Erie area, want to come by and say hello, we'll be doing our thing, running around. We got a radar gun this year now. It's got spin rate on it.
Wow.
So we have somebody that definitely helped us out with get that.
Cool.
Yeah. So, Greg, thanks again for taking the time this evening.
Good to see you guys on the screens, and we'll see you in person in a couple days here.
All right. Okay. Thanks, man. Have a great night.
All right. Safe travels. And people, donate to these two. Give them money. They do a lot of work.
All right. Thanks, Greg. We'll see you, man.
All right. See you guys.
See ya. All right. So that is the voice of the Erie Seawolves. Greg got here with us and him taking the time to talk to us. So we're going to be going over to the Tigers Metrics or Motor City Metrics podcast here in a second. So if you want to join us over there, John and Youper have gotten things going.
Well, we just a quick run through West Michigan.
Let's do a quick run through.
It's such a thrill to have Greg on here, and I just want to talk about Erie the whole time. But we did want to touch on. We saw West Michigan started 3-0.
Yes,
you played that Dan Hasty clip, which was really basically went viral of him doing a baseball game like a golf game. But we were out there for opening day, which was a very cold day, and it was a 1-0 game. But the Whitecaps ran into a really good pitcher from the Padres. What's his name? It's Iriarte. Jairo Iriarte. He's like a top 10 prospect in the Padres system. And he came out throwing 94 to 96 with an above average slider and a plus changeup. I was like, come on, this is not fair. He struck out Cerretti and Young on 7 pitches.
That was impressive.
And then what also stood out to me was Eliezer Alfonso has been around West Michigan for seemingly 4 or 5 years now. And he's a guy who couldn't stay healthy last year, but he barreled up Iriarte. It hit a deep double. So that's noteworthy because this is a big league arm. Like, the command isn't big league yet. But and then Ben Malgeri took him deep, which was like, wow, that's interesting. Because I don't think Ben Malgeri hit more than a handful of home runs last year. And then he homered in his second game, and it was a bomb. So this is very interesting because Malgeri is a legit center fielder. He can play all 3 positions, but he's good enough to play center field. And he's got speed. And I don't know about the hit tool. Overall, he struggles with some sliders, but if he's going to hit for power, you might have yourself a future fourth outfielder. So that was a cool development to see. And then other than that, Young really struggled the first night, came back with a couple hits game 2, which was nice to see. Pacheco stood out mostly for his defense. I think we saw that in I think just about every game he made an impressive defensive play. Now, he's not Scott Rolen, but he looks like he can be a big league third baseman, which was something that I was very skeptical about beginning when they drafted him because he's so big. But he's really got good footwork, and he was ranging, and he was spinning, and his throws are accurate and on the money. So that's impressive development there. And I'm trying to think, the pitching was a little bit, so I saw Wilkel Hernandez, right, who's been around for a while, and we've heard him up to the mid 90s before, but he was sitting 91 93 in that game with not much in terms of his secondary pitches, but 4 scoreless innings, so I can't complain too much. And then same with Carlos Pena, the lefty who's an under-the-radar guy that you've highlighted before. He was 4 scoreless innings.
That's a good stat right there.
Thank you, sir. Sergio,
that's a good pull there. Thank you.
4 homers from Algeria, 373 at-bats last year, 2 in his first, 5 at-bats this year?
Yeah.
So, that's an impressive. It could be just one of those things, but could be something to keep an eye on. Maybe he's pulling a Parker Meadows this year. But then we got Keiter Montero in game 3, who actually gave up a run, but he was the one he's got the most impressive stuff out of those first 3 starters. So it was nice to see him pitch again. But their offense, it's Danny Cerretti's back there. He had a double and a triple, I think, in game 2. So that was nice to see. And you got Campos, Roberto Campos. Really, I think I don't know if he's younger. He might be a month younger than Pacheco or a month older. They're both pretty close in age. And he hasn't hit anything hard yet, but he was showing a pretty advanced approach. He was hitting the ball the opposite way. He got his first hit between first base and second base, which I don't think it was he was on a fastball, so he was trying to hit it that way, I think. So, I don't know. It's early, but they look pretty good so far. There's a lot of older players on the team, but they are older good players. The good
minor Garcia, league players. Garcia was in Double-A last year,
You got Chris Myers looks solid out there. You've got, I'm trying to think who else is in the outfield, but
Zach Hess is on a rehab assignment, so he'll probably be in Erie soon.
Yeah, Zach Hess, it was nice to see him back after missing all of last year.
I barely recognize him with that golden block hair.
He's growing out his hair. Tyler Madison was their 4th round pick, I want to say, 2 years ago. he's closed out two of the first three games, and it still looks like a future big league reliever. It's a really unusual arm angle with a lot of movement and a lot of vertical carry and stuff like that. So there's some fun stuff to talk about in West Michigan, and they're off to a good start. So that's nice to see.
Yeah, their bullpen is a kind of a veteran. This is a veteran team coming into this, and so here's a guy that there's a couple names we saw last year towards the end. Blake comes to mind. He pitched a scoreless inning, or he pitched two innings, two strikeouts so far. And so I'm looking forward to getting some of the arms out there and take a look at what they have, because they do have, especially Jack Anderson, another arm that we put under a name that you should begin to know. Yeah, I think for West Michigan, it's not as clear cut as starters per se. Mm-hmm. Then it's, I think it's almost similar to Toledo in the sense they're just going to be a lot of bullpen arms trying to get some work.
Yeah, and I think they've used Garrett Burhan. I don't know if Jordan Marks was pitching with them or if he was in Lakeland. I forgot. But
Marks, I want to say he was in Lakeland.
He may have been, yeah, because he was another guy that was with. I think he's on the West Michigan IL, so he may be rehabbing. But yeah, and anybody in the area, the Whitecaps are going to be in Lansing all this week. We're not going to be able to be there because we're going to be in Erie on Tuesday, Wednesday. But I'm going to try to get out there maybe Friday, Saturday, or Sunday.
I was thinking about the same thing. I think the Tigers on the road still till. We have a wonderful baseball dinner.
They're up at
Toronto.
So they're off to Toronto Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They're back home Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay.
So maybe a Thursday. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a lot of travel for 3 days, but we like this. So,
yeah, we definitely dig it. So, again, if you want to donate, there's a super chat button right there. You can do that or go to our patreon.com/Tiger Minor League Report. We've been putting some content out there. We'll continue to do so. I'll do a better job of Patreon this year, I promise. Last year, I know we had some people drop off saying I lack of content. It wouldn't occur to me that I could have just put this on there. Scouting reports are there. Some of the live look stuff is there as well. So if you want to continue, we're going to be talking about the Tigers here over at Motor City Metrics. So if you want to join us over there, we appreciate it. And this podcast will be a weekly Sunday night podcast. So we'll be doing weekly podcasts with this going forward with the Tiger Minor League Report. So if you haven't subscribed to us on iTunes, find us Tiger Minor League Report podcast and Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks so much for checking us out live this evening. We appreciate it. Again, thanks to Greg for joining us. It was huge of him to come on the pod. We'll be out there Tuesday and Wednesday. So if you have any special requests for us or any kind of special notes you want us to take a look at any certain players, just let us know. We'll definitely do that. I'll be also bringing on my camera, so I'm trying to bust out as many pictures as I can. And good to know that they're going to be in Holland jerseys going to be out Thursday. I'm not going to be able to see those, but yeah. But either way, a lot of good stuff going on, and we appreciate you taking the time this evening to join us, and we'll talk to you again later. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.